thank you very much, and thank you for the organizers for inviting me to this place. This was the most inspiring and most relaxing environment in the past 6 years for me. So I'm going to talk about this work, which has been started for many years. I will go along and tell you when. What I already mentioned to Laura at the beginning, that the very first workshop on the topic was organized by Zoltán Kunst in 1993 in Zurich, where he collected some experts from the... Brian, you were there, I guess. To try to gauge what is needed for next-to-next leading order calculations. That was the time when the first two-loop amplitude, well, not amplitude, master integral was computed by Yusukina and Davidichev. And many interesting things were around. And clearly, the workshop was a bit premature because the next leading order calculations came much, much later. In any case, this has been done in collaboration with Vittorio from the beginning. He already gave a talk on this topic, and I apologize to those who might have heard of that talk, that there will be some overlap, although not exactly the same. And there were some developments since then. And Gábor Somogyi joined fairly early, and he was a very important key player in making this go through. Then there was an important piece from Claude and Adam. I will explain what. With Francesco, we made the first implementation of the next-to-next leading order method to compute Higgs decay into BB bar. I'm not going to talk about that today. Zoltán is in the audience, and he's working on extending this work to beyond electron-positron annihilation, including initial state radiations. And he's a very fresh PhD student who is going to work with us in the future. This is the outline. And in particular, I will spend quite a bit of time on the method, not explaining the details, but the key concepts, and also give some historical account, because this project was going on for 15 years, and there were people coming in, going out, and it might be interesting to give an account once when the first application is done. I forgot to mention that this talk is based on this preprint, which was put on the archive yesterday. Then I will talk about a little bit of the main difficulty, why it took so long, and then at the end, the results. And in particular, I will mention some work which has started here and probably will lead to some useful information. So the first question is, why am I worried about event shapes in electron-positron annihilation? And this plot you might see in, 2 or 3 weeks ago during the workshop, which was, I mean, the mini conference, which was here. And this is a prediction for the Higgs cross-section in gluon-gluon fusion using different parton density functions. And most of the parton density functions give prediction here, and you might be satisfied that they coincide. But the common feature of these is that they fix the strong coupling for the so-called word average. And there is one which fits the PDFs and the word coupling simultaneously, and they obtain a much smaller coupling value, and as a result, a much smaller cross-section. So it is certainly, the value of the strong coupling certainly matters a lot. We have to measure it as precisely as possible. And the event shapes are sensitive to the strong coupling. They are measured extensively. And in principle, they can be computed from first principles, assuming local parton hadron duality. So this is a very nice environment to measure the strong coupling completely independently of all the complications which enter the business when you have initial state colloid particles. And in fact, this has been done in the past, and I will tell you some about the results. But first, let me explain a little bit why it is important to consider next and next learning order for these corrections for these observables. And here you see the thrust distribution. T is thrust, so this is 1 minus thrust, d sigma d tau, weighted with tau. And what you see here is the leading order prediction with the usual scale dependence, the randomization scale varied between half and two, and this is the same at next to leading order. And what you see here is, well, it's a breakdown of perturbation theory, you might say, because the prediction is very different and the scale-dependent bands do not overlap whatsoever. So you might wonder whether this perturbation theory, which is on first principles, it works at all, especially if you compare it to the precise Aleph data shown here, where, and there is a lot of room in between the two. So you might want to know the high order corrections. And since these have been done, resummation of large logarithms have been made available either at next to leading logarithmic or n cube logarithmic accuracy, depending on the type of the event shapes. For instance, for thrust, it is n cube, also for C parameter, for rho, heavy jet mass, and for the broadenings, it is n squared logarithmic. And they have an important effect on these predictions, as I will show at the end. And there was also analytic model developed for hadronization, because of course you know that there is hadronization above the perturbative predictions. And these hadronization models were studied extensively about 15 years ago. And this was the result. The hadronization models have their own non-perturbative parameter, and this is the strong coupling, and what you see here is a simultaneous fit to data, lab data, of the various event shapes, total broadening, wide broadening, C parameter, thrust, and heavy jet mass. And well, the picture is a little bit disturbing. First of all, you can see that there is a clear correlation between the two measured variables. So the coupling is affected by the value of the non-perturbative parameter. And as the perturbative predictions were known only to a limited accuracy at that time, you might wonder whether part of the non-perturbative contributions, which are taken into account here by this analytic model, may be mixed up with perturbative contributions, which are different for the different kind of event shapes. And so that's why you do not have a unified picture. You would like to see that all these ellipses overlap in a certain region, which singles out the value of the strong coupling and the non-perturbative parameter. And also the value of the strong coupling with these fits is rather on the larger end, close to 0.12. And the conclusion of this paper by Daniel Vick and Gavin Salam was that in particular, it could be due to a difference in the behavior of the perturbation series at higher orders. It, you don't know unless you make the calculation.
Do they have to do the three normalons and things like that they're talking about?
The renormals are included in this analysis, yes.
That's the kind of difference they're worried about, is that right?
Well, what they are worried about is whether the higher order perturbative predictions for the distributions are the source of these discrepancies, or maybe other sources.
But the infrared renormalons affect the higher order.
Well, they have a crosstalk.
Compensation.
There's a compensation.
Is this with the hadron mass effects or not?
This is with the hadron mass effects. And they also speculate that the hadron mass effects may have an important effect.
But it's even worse if you don't take them into
account. It's even worse if you don't take into account the hadron mass effects. That's right. So, that was in 15 years ago, okay? And that was a time when I started to be involved in this problem. I will tell you how. So the problem is when you want to compute the one order higher contributions is that you have, or you all know, double real radiation, single radiation combined with loop and double loop contributions, and these are all singular separately. The matrix elements which are needed here are known for double real emission and real virtual, that this was the content of the next leading order revolution. And these are also known, the two loop amplitudes are also known for four-parton and vector boson plus three-parton processes. And there is an immense amount of work invested to go one leg higher, and higher multiplicities will come pretty soon, I am pretty sure. So, the question is then how to combine these separately singular pieces into the finite cross section. And there were discussions here in this workshop that there are several approaches, started with the sector decomposition, then the Antonin subtraction, the QT slicing, the stripper method. More recently, the angiotensin slicing, which seems to be very successful. And the one which we have been working on is this completely local subtractions for fully differential predictions at next-to-next leading order accuracy, which is the colorful NNLU acronym stands for this long statement. And also, it has a double meaning. Colorful means that we actually take into account color explicitly in all the expressions. So I have my personal opinion that a completely satisfactory solution is not yet available. There are nice attempts, and they have to get mature and see which will get the status which we have at next to leading order, like the Catani-Seymour dipoles or the FKS subtraction, which can be then implemented in an automated fashion and can give you precise predictions. So our goal was to devise a subtraction scheme with several features. First of all, we wanted fully local counter terms because I, from my experience at next leading order, this influences the numerical efficiency of the calculations. And this is mathematically well defined. You subtract and add back exactly the same thing. You do not approximate anything. So the starting and the ending point of the calculations are the same. We wanted to make fully differential predictions with jet functions defined in four dimensions so that you can make a numerical evaluation of the integrals with Monte Carlo techniques. I wanted to write down everything on paper without hiding anything into the code, so that anybody else, if he's interested, can take the formula which is written in the paper and in principle can code it without any additional hidden information. In particular, we use the color space notation of Catani, which then takes color into account explicitly, and we also treat the flavor explicitly. And finally, I wanted to give a general construction, which is in principle valid all order in perturbation theory. And we also wanted to use this option of constraining the subtractions near the singular region, which we invented with Zoltan, who was my student also, 15 years ago or more than, about 20 years ago, which can serve as an important check because you can vary what you subtract and add back, and the final result must be independent of this variation. But also it influences the numerical efficiency a little bit, not dramatically, but you can gain maybe a factor of two.
And this is supposed to be a subtraction scheme, not a slicing scheme.
A subtraction scheme, yes, exactly. Yeah. So such schemes are known at next leading order. For instance, the Catani symmetric dipoles, the FKS. We also developed one with Zoltan, another one with Gabor. And there are others. These are the most well-known ones. And the question is whether you can repeat these steps at next to leading order. And this question was asked by Vittorio to me when we published this paper by Stefan Michael on the massive dipoles. That was the massive dipole scheme. And this question by Vittorio completely deterred me from the application of that method. So I have never given an application of the method that I developed, which may be a shame, because the next-to-next leading order extension completely absorbed my time. So what are the steps? Compute the QCD factorization formulae. And these were available at the turn of the millennium. So it was kind of obvious to try to use them. And this is universal, so you can, if you can implement the subtraction scheme based on these lines, then you will have a universal subtraction scheme. Construct local subtractions over the whole phase space based on this factorization formulae and based on phase space mappings, for instance, kind of mappings which are used here, that was the idea. The dipole mappings, and well, I will tell you whether the idea worked or what we have to change. Then integrate subtractions over the unresolved phase space and also sum over unresolved additional quantum numbers like color and flavor. But you can do this once for all, then you can, once you done, you have done it, you only need matrix elements and you can apply the method to any kind of calculation. cancel the infrared poles, and the idea is to cancel these analytically, so you are sure that mathematically everything is well defined. And this is also a universal feature. And finally, implement the integration of the finite remainders in Partenic Monte Carlo codes. And if you have this implementation, then a user can write his own little user interface where he wants to implement the observable to compute at the given order in perturbation theory, and that is a very little piece of code, so it can be carried. Now, these steps proven to be too difficult at next-to-next leading order, and in particular, all groups have given up except others. So the question is whether we should leave these approach rest in peace. And my claim is that actually we should revive it, but I will tell you why, and also why is it difficult. So the subtractions that we have to define are governed by the observables, which are collected in the jet functions. The jet functions define the observable over the available momenta. So in double virtual, you have m momenta. Real virtual, you have m plus one momenta. And in the double real, you have m plus two momenta for an m jet observable. In the specific case that we are discussing today, m is equal to three, because three jet event shapes. And then you can subtract an approximate cross-section that regularizes the kinematical singularities in the double real radiation in the double unresolved limits. And you subtract it, and then, as I mentioned, you integrate out the unresolved quantum numbers and you add it back. So the structure is very well known. Now, the difficulty in this case was to make sure that you count the overlapping singularities only once. And that was done first in this paper with the help of Vittorio and Gabor. But the real solution to the problem was given in this paper, which was never published in a journal because the referee just hasn't understood the significance. Nevertheless, this paper gives a very simple and completely universal to all order in perturbation theory how to disentangle the singularities, which are triple collinear, double collinear, soft collinear, double soft, and so on, which appear in a complex mixture in the double real radiation. The other contribution that you have to include is the same for single unresolved radiation. And for this, we have well-defined expressions, like the Catania-Seymour dipoles. But it turns out that those cannot be generalized to next-to-next leading order, and the reason is simple, although it took several years to me to appreciate. Namely, in the dipoles, you need a hard emitter and a hard spectator, which emits a soft or collinear particle. And at next-to-next leading order, any of these hard emitters can become soft. And if they become soft, then the picture is broken down. So you have to make sure that the emitter or the spectator never becomes soft or unresolved. And in the Antony picture, this is done because they use color-ordered amplitudes, sub-amplitudes, stripped of color, and then they can simply order which are the emitter and the spectator and the two unresolved particles in between. But when you treat all particles on an equal footing, like we do here, then you cannot make sure that emitter and a spectator in this piece can stay still hard in the double unresolved regions. So that's, yes.
Basically, the spectator breaks down here. So
the spectator breaks down here, that's right.
The momentum mapping, which is pathological in this.
Well, the momentum mapping, exactly. This has been developed in this paper that we wrote with Gábor at next to leading order, and then in the whole process at next to next leading order. And then, of course, if you have two subtractions, one for the single unresolved and one for the double unresolved, then they may overlap. And you have, again, an additional overlapping problem, which has to be resolved in this term, which simply cancels the double overlapping. But the requirements on this are quite strict, because in the double unresolved regions, these have to regularize this piece. In the single unresolved regions, where this is the regulator, these have to regularize this piece. And that is fairly non-trivial how to satisfy all requirements. And you add it back, so you have not yet changed anything. Then we added the single unresolved integrated out over the unresolved back here. This is just like a next leading order calculation, which makes this free of explicit infrared poles. But this still has kinematical singularities when one particle becomes unresolved, which has to be regularized. And this piece regularizes this one, and this piece regularizes this one. This is, again, fairly non-trivial, because there is no factorization theorem which tells you that when you integrate out this and add back here, then it has universal singular limits. For instance, with the Catani-Seymour dipoles, when you compute this, those do not have universal singular limits. And so you have to make sure that the way this is defined and then integrated out has universal infrared factorization, on which you can build a subtraction term here, integrate it out, and add it back here. So this has been based upon the universal QCD factorization properties, and this simple and general procedure of separating the overlapping singularities that I mentioned before, and on phase space mappings, which extends the factorization formulae over the whole phase space. And these phase space mappings are not unique. You can try many ways. And I'm not claiming that the one which we use are the best ones, but these are ones which work. So we use these momentum phase space mappings differently for collinear and soft limit. And this is not very nice, I admit, but that's what I was able to find out. And the key feature of these mappings is that the recoil, which in the Catani-Seymour dipoles is taken by a single spectator, is now taken by the whole rest of the event, which can never become soft, never become unresolved. The whole event is always hard. So that takes the recoil, which makes the calculations, of course, very difficult, because you have many particles instead of a single one, which takes the recoil.
You have also proper recoil in the soft singularities, so in the soft mapping. So in the soft mapping, do you use also global recall or
yes. Yeah, well, we use the usual trick of Lorentz transformation. So this may be improved. In any case, the picture is that which emerges in this mapping is that the original M plus 2 part of phase space, for instance, when you have one unresolved particle, can be written in a factorized form with a convolution of a 2 part of phase space and an M plus 1 part of phase space. If you have here 3 particles, because you are considering 2 unresolved particles, then, for instance, triple collinear limit, then you have a convolution of a 3 particle phase space and an M particle phase space. This is for the collinear one, the C stands for the collinear, and for the soft one, we have again a convolution, but a different type. You have a 2 particle phase space with one massive leg convoluted with an M plus 1 particle phase space, or in case of 2 unresolved particles, you have an extra unresolved one, and a 3 and an M here. So, with...
Just do a boost and a rescaling of the rest of the
area. Yes, exactly. So, then we are able to define the subtraction terms, and this was already achieved almost 10 years ago. And it was possible to implement it in a general Monte Carlo code, general purpose Monte Carlo code, to compute these bits. Of course, if you don't know how to compute the rest, then the real motivation to compute, to implement these seriously is not very strong. And there was an attempt by Gábor and Simone Alioli to implement these, but they have never finished that implementation. The real work was done by Adam in the audience last year, when we already understood that the whole scheme works, because we were able to compute also the last line, and we got everything very well. So there was a strong motivation to write the code, and so Adam has implemented the subtraction scheme for general M in this code, which is called Monte Carlo for colorful subtraction method. This code is complex and contains many features which you may not need at the actual computations, but are very useful when you want to check that everything works. For instance, there are built-in checks to check the subtractions locally. You pick an arbitrary phase space point and you approach it from a collinear point of view, or from a soft point of view. Here, for instance, there is a triple collinear limit at an arbitrarily chosen phase space point. And as you control the exponent of the small variable, which in this case the invariant mass of the triple particle cluster, and it's 10 to the minus 17 is scaled by the Hart scale, then this is the subtraction, the CIRS, triple collinear subtraction. This is the radial double real emission matrix element, and this is the ratio of the two, and you see very nicely that as it goes smaller and smaller, the collinear angle, then you have better and better agreement between the two.
This is quadruple
precision. Double precision stops roughly here. But the double quadruple precision check is built in. It's not used, quadruple precision is not used in the actual numerical calculations, but the check is built in. You can do the same thing, not only for specific regions, specific subtraction terms, like the triple corner subtraction, but for the whole complete subtraction. So, for instance, this is the complete n plus 2 Parton contribution in a given phase space limit. And this is the double unresolved, and this is the single unresolved check in a given phase space point. I'm not sure which region is this. I guess this is a double soft. And you see that the subtraction is indeed local.
The first one is a collinear soft one.
Collinear soft one.
Collinear, and the other one is soft, and the second is just the collinear case, and a quark and a gluon is
collinear. Yes, it's given here. A quark and a gluon is collinear, and here is a soft, and the two gluons are collinear, yes, simultaneously. We have this sort of checks that we make the distribution of the subtraction over the real double real radiation as we make smaller and smaller the invariant which governs the limit. This is a single collinear limit. This is a double soft limit. For any kind of possible configurations, we have similar plots, and you see that they nicely shrink to the peak at 1 as you make these smaller and smaller. For the real virtual radiation, the cancellation has different sorts of problems. Here the kinematical structure is much simpler because there is only one unresolved particle which can become soft or collinear, not like in the previous case when we had two. But the analytic structure of the matrix element is much more complex. It includes, for instance, hypergeometric functions. And here I make a picture of the Verrier's contribution. So this is the one loop and three level squared. So the real virtual matrix element, and this is the corresponding integrated single unresolved subtraction. And the poles, as you know, cancel between these two, just like in any next to leading order calculation. Similarly, the poles cancel between these expressions. So in the bracket, you see this in the bracket. The first piece, and this one is the second piece. And you know that the universal factorization formula is such that loop matrix elements times three-level arterelli parity plus three matrix element times loop arterelli parity. And a similar structure can be found when you integrate this out. And the cancellation of the poles come pairwise. Among these. The kinematical singularities, on the other hand, when you have soft or collinear particles in the final state, can appear horizontally. So for this one, which is the real virtual matrix element, this provides the kinematical cancellation. And for this one, which is the integrated subtraction, a corresponding approximate matrix element provides the kinematical, the cancellation of the kinematical poles. This is shown here, again built-in checks in the code. This is a single collinear limit for the poles and also for the these cancel for the poles pairwise. This one and this one, and similarly the other one, this one and this one. So all the kinematical singularities are checked locally in arbitrary phase space points built in the code. This I already mentioned, that we have this kind of horizontal cancellation, and again you see the same kind of subtraction over real virtual plus integrated subtraction, and you see that they regularize the matrix elements in the kinematically unresolved regions. So it means that these are finite and can be implemented, which I already told you. And then comes the difficulty. We have now these pieces, and we have to integrate these further on and combine with the double virtual contribution, which has poles starting at 1 over epsilon to the fourth, going to 1 over epsilon. And these pieces also have similar poles, and at the end, they must cancel. We have to integrate over the unresolved momenta, sum over unresolved colors, and sum over unresolved flavors, which is denoted by these signs here. And the net result of all these manipulations is that these individual subtraction terms can be written similarly, like in the dipole case, and products of insertion operators and lower point cross sections. Okay, the lower point cross section is the bone cross section corresponding to this process, and the and the insertion operator depends on one or two. Depends on the colors of the bone matrix element, so it contains color correlations, and it depends also on the kinematics of the bone matrix element. This can be derived fairly easily schematically, so you start with the phase space and the matrix element, you factorize with the phase space mapping, both phase space, and you factorize both the matrix element in the singular region. You have a singular factor which has to be integrated over the unresolved phase space, and you have to sum over the unresolved flavors and momenta. And this, what remains, gives you the reduced matrix element, and this gives you the insertion operator. It's simple to outline, but it's difficult to compute. The summation of the flavor, unresolved flavors, was worked out in this paper. It's not very difficult technically, but a bit tedious. And then comes the integration over the unresolved phase space. And that becomes, in principle, simple, because the structure is the following. We have the two particle phase space, and we have a alternating prodigy splitting function, or we have an Eikonal function in the case of the soft. And the two, and we have a convolution of this as explained in the phase space mapping. So this is what you have to compute. And the two-particle phase space can be written in a general form. And then the kind of integrals which you encounter become complicated because you have not only the tree-level alternating paradigm, but also the loop-level alternating paradigm, which includes hypergeometric functions and includes also nasty factors. In addition, in this phase space mapping, the momentum fraction variable becomes complicated. And that's which makes the calculation of the integrals tedious. And they have been computed in these papers. At some stages, Ugo played a role, and Claude, then Paolo Bolzoni and Sven Moch played some role. And this is a general feature. We have similar kind of integrals for the three-particle case. The only difference is that here we have the three-particle phase space and more complicated soft function. Now, in order to compute the integrals, we developed two strategies in order to be able to make sure that the final result is correct. The first strategy is the following. We write the phase space using angles and energies. We compute the angular integrals in terms of Merlin-Barnes representations. And then we can resolve the epsilon pose by analytic continuation. This is a general approach in the Merlin-Barnes integrals. Then these Merlin-Barnes integrals become Euler-type integrals, and pole coefficients are finite parametric integrals, which you might be able to compute analytically exactly, or at worst case, you compute numerically. The other approach is to choose an explicit parametrization of the phase space, write the parametric integral representation in chosen variables, and then resolve the epsilon pose using sector decomposition. And for this purpose, actually, there is automated tool, if you do everything numerical, which is the SecDec, for instance. The pole coefficients in this case are finite parametric integrals, which again can be computed numerically. The analytic evaluation of these is usually very difficult because they become tens of megabytes of expressions. So you either evaluate these parametric integrals which appear at the end in terms of multiple polylogarithms or numerically. And this is the situation. We have altogether 287 integrals. Well, there are general types which include subtypes. And the current situation is that all pole coefficients of, and so all pole coefficients are computed analytically. And in addition, the logarithmic terms of the finite parts are also computed analytically. Some cases, everything is known analytically. In some cases, the power terms in the finite parts are computed only numerically. And in this piece, to get the analytic calculations done, we were able to use Claude's help and his code to compute, I mean, not to compute the integrals, but to simplify the integrals to manageable expressions. But the original results are given in Goncharov polylogarithms, and Claude has a code to simplify those to polylogarithms. And in our case, it was possible to do for each integral. So after this, which I summarized in 2 minutes, but took 9 years, we are able to write down all of these integrated subtractions in this factorized form, reduced matrix element and insertion operators. And the insertion operators involve all possible color connections for the given number of unresolved partons. So if you have one unresolved parton, then you have color connection between two, that's one, or you have color connection on the same line, which is the Casimir, quadratic Casimir. And there are kinematic functions which contain the epsilon poles. If you have only one unresolved parton, then 1 over epsilon squared and 1 over epsilon. And they depend on the kinematic variables of the reduced phase space. For the two-particle case, everybody can write down the similar formula, considering all the possible color connections among three, two, three, or four legs, or on single legs. So for instance, on a single leg you have quadratic Casimir twice, or quadratic Casimir on one leg and quadratic Casimir on two, the other leg. If you have color correction between two hard legs, then you can have quadratic Casimirs, or you can have color connections between four hard legs. The difficulty is to get these kinematic coefficients correctly. I still have time, although eventually you will have to shoot me. In the case of this piece, there is an additional complication which appears only when you have more than three hard particles involved. So for instance, in the three-jet calculation, it does not appear, but in more complex final states or involving initial states, these also appear. And this we have not computed yet, although this is much simpler than most of the integrals.
You never have a D symbol, a DABC term?
DABC term we don't. And what else? Well, I think I can skip this one. The bottom line is that the color structures of these insertion operators are independent of the precise definition of the subtractions, which means the precise definition of momentum mappings. Only the subleading coefficients of the epsilon expansion in the kinematic functions may depend on this. We have computed all insertion operators for arbitrary n down to 1 over epsilon squared. The 1 over epsilon is not yet done for arbitrary m. We have computed all insertion operators analytically, including finite pieces for m equal 2, including 1 over epsilon terms for m equal 3, and as I explained before, the logarithms in the finite piece for m equal 3. And so, after all these difficulties, having solved all these difficulties, we have some rewards. And the reward is that we can cancel the poles. So this is actually a miracle to see after 10 years, that the poles cancel exactly. So in the case of m equal 2, the insertion operators are independent of the kinematics. The momenta are back to back, so only the endpoint of the master integrals are needed, which is easy to compute. The color algebra is also trivial, and we can demonstrate the cancellation of the poles, and I can show you this at the end if you are interested, that indeed each numbers appear with exactly the opposite sign. In the case of m equals 3, the color algebra can be performed also explicitly. The phase space is well known, this triangle, and it is also fairly simple. You only have two independent kinematic variables, for instance y13, the reduced two-particle invariant, and y23, the reduced two-particle invariant. And so the kinematic functions depend on these two only. The pole structure of the double virtual is known from Catani and also from explicit calculations by these people. And it's fairly simple if you consider the complexity of the integrals which go into this double virtual calculation. And when we add our integrated subtractions, then we get 200,000 mathematical lines, which I can compute numerically at any given phase space point, and this is what my mathematical code gives. So then you are pretty sure that this is indeed zero, but actually you can go further on. This is the structure of the integrated subtractions, which when you rewrite in terms of the insertion operators, you have an I2 corresponding to this one, an I12 corresponding to this one, and so on and so forth. And you can notice, after some inspection, that the combination which appears here, except with the 1 over 4, has actually a very simple structure. It can be written in this form. And this form is universal in the sense that it takes into account the number of the hard particles in the case at hand. For instance, for 3-jet, we have a Q and a Q bar, so 2 times a Q function, universal function, and 1 gluon. And the insertion operator is just the usual insertion operator of Catani, which is also additive in the number of hard legs. So I have a proof for this only for M equals 3, but I guess this is a universal result, but I don't have a proof yet. Nevertheless, this 200,000 mathematical lines can be actually simplified with the symbol technique of Claude, and you can check that it is actually zero analytically too. So the message, the bottom line, is that this combination, which is the missing piece for a numerical calculation, is indeed zero in 4 dimensions. And so you can give applications. And I would like to show in the last 5 or 10 minutes some applications, unless you are tired. So here is the application number 1. This is 3-jet event shapes, old because these have been computed before. Actually, there are 2 computations. One is by Gudrun, who was here, the 2 Germans, and Nigel Glover. This is the ERED code. And the other one is by Stefan Weinzier. They both use the same antenna method, antenna subtraction method, but a different numerical implementation. And this is the prediction for the next to leading order coefficient of the C parameter. So the differential distribution can be expanded in alpha s, and this is the next to leading order coefficient. This is the next to leading order coefficient, and this is the leading order coefficient. The first 2 I showed at the very beginning for the thrust, and this is for the case of the C parameter, which can be computed from the final state momenta of the event by event. This is our prediction, the red distribution, and these are the 2 other predictions, and these are their predictions normalized to ours. And what you see is that actually there is a fairly good agreement. You might notice there is a very narrow gray line here and also here. That gray line shows the numerical uncertainty of the integration in our Monte Carlo code, while the error bars show the numerical uncertainty that the other 2 predictions provide. So the general feature one may deduce, which you will see also on next plot, is that there is a leading order kinematic limit for all these event shapes. For instance, for 3 parameter, it is 3/4. And beyond this kinematic limit, the calculation is actually next to leading order. And they fail to describe that next to leading order. At least we have a difference, a visible difference, and we are sure that our is correct because we computed it with Zoli Nagy many years ago, and also we compared more recently to the Medgraph and code, which can compute the next leading order for this process automatically. On the other end, there is also a kind of hint of discrepancy. not so much with Stefan, but a little more with the other group. I don't know the origin of this discrepancy, but it could be insufficient population of the phase space. Of course, you may wonder whether our is correct or the other one, and I will have some more words on this. This is the physical prediction, so everything included in the fixed order. And this is the leading order, next to leading order, scale dependence band, and this is the next to next to leading order with the histogram, our prediction. The other one shown here is the GGGH, and I also show the LF data. So there is a still sizable discrepancy. And I started some work here at KITP, and I understand by now that most of this discrepancy is actually accounted by missing large logarithmic contributions, which have to be resummed for small values of the C, of the event shape. And then there are also hadronization corrections. Here again, you see that there is a fairly good agreement up to the leading order kinematic limit for both predictions, and you see this kind of deviation for GGGH for very small values of event shapes. Well, from phenomenological point of view, this deviation is not so significant, because the bulk of the data is in this region anyway, and we do not really use this data. What is more worrisome a little bit is that the size of the uncertainty, I mean numerical uncertainty, is comparable to the size of the randomization scale uncertainty. And if you want to make a precision prediction, it has to be correct formally up to the desired order, but also you would like to match that with the numerical precision, because otherwise you have not made very significant progress.
It's not just a question. So the Stefan code is basically agrees with your code completely, even in the small C parameter.
This is now the thrust.
But in the previous code, see, the C, a small C parameter.
Yes.
So that there is pretty much pretty big disagreement between these GGGH. And your code, but why the Stefan Weise code is a perfect agreement with your code? So what's, but most of them based on antenna.
Well, they are different numerical implementations. I don't know the difference. I mean, I have no clue, no insight to any of these codes. But I'm going to show you more.
Can I ask you, maybe I missed too. You said, so I understand that the base discrepancy is beyond the endpoint of the leading order calculation.
Here, this is beyond the endpoint of the leading order, and there is some difference here, which you cannot see here, which is asked by a certain time.
And you said that you checked with the NLO calculation that
yes.
Your calculation is correct. But do you understand what's going wrong with the others?
Well, I can just guess that they do not populate the phase space sufficiently, because they certainly make some, I assume they make some sampling, important sampling or something to make the numerical calculation more efficient in these regions and less efficient in the edges of the phase space.
Can you expect larger scatter and not a systematic problem?
Yeah, it's exactly.
Okay.
So it's systematically below.
I don't have any more information on this. These plots actually been shown by Vittorio at the beginning of the workshop, and there was some discrepancy at that time also with Stefan, and he was prompted to make better predictions. He had actually some problem in the original implementation, which he understood later what the problem was, and now we have nice agreement with this one.
Can I ask another question?
Yeah.
So you mentioned that the big discrepancy, so you have in mind the discrepancy with respect to the data can be logs?
Yes, I will
discuss. So at like 0.4, 0.5?
That's interesting, but that's the fact, yes. Brian?
Yeah, you don't show any statistical errors on your prediction, so...
These are the statistical errors. These are the statistical errors on my prediction.
The gray.
Okay. The gray one. Okay? Scaled, so there is a general feature that it increases at some point where this is the point where it crosses to zero, so the relative becomes large. But the absolute is also shown on this plot, you just cannot see it.
Is it about 1%?
It's more way below 1%. Adam, do you know by heart?
I think it's below 1%.
Okay, so these are the broadenings. Well, in the case of broadening, here you might suspect some systematic deviation. It's difficult to say, difficult to draw a very strict conclusion. This is the other broadening. The other broadening looks fine.
You always have statistical, significantly large statistical uncertainty around 0.05 there, always at the...
Here, that's the point where the distribution crosses zero. Okay? So the absolute uncertainty remains the same, but the relative uncertainty increases because you divide by zero. So that's why it increases, but that's just an artificial effect of showing this this rescaled prediction. Nevertheless, it's quite remarkable that the next leading order scale uncertainty is below 5%. For instance, for broadening, it's smaller, and the data are actually quite close in this region. So where you have a good prediction at next to next leading order, the data are actually quite close. This is the Y23 variable, which separates a given event from being 2-jet or 3-jet using the Durham clustering. And here, actually, you see... So here the scale is very different, right? Because it's a logarithmic scale on the horizontal axis. So the large values are here, and there, well, actually the agreement with Stefan is not that great because you cannot see anything. So everything falls outside. We have some agreement with the other code. And for small values, there is significant difference.
But is it precisely the observable that will be affected by subtraction shape or like extrapolation to the whole field space? Or?
Well, this is just like any other observables. The only difference is that here I have a different representation because the horizontal axis is logarithmic. So basically, I enlarge the first bin, which is not even seen here. And the rest is suppressed.
You're saying that the higher order correction is very small. The next leading order correction is very small.
Not necessarily, is it? Not necessarily.
Well, in the large Y region, so.
This is the very small Y23 region,
yeah,
right?
Large Y.
In the large Y region, well, it is suppressed. The reason I'm showing it this way because Stefan produced his plot this way, and I wanted to make a comparison to him.
So just a question about the small Y region. So that's the low-dominated region. So there is a difference. So
there is a difference.
Next leading log difference.
There is even a next leading log. This is the difference in the C coefficient, which is the next to next leading. Well, it's kind of unsettling that even the data are not very good. I cannot believe that this can be correct. Here I show both Stefan and GGGH predictions. And so this is what you see for the next-to-next leading order coefficient only, where we agree pretty well. Also here. So it seems that maybe the source of the difference here is for the next to leading order prediction, and less from the next to leading order prediction. So you might ask, then, what happens at very small values of event shape? And for very small values of event shape, you can make analytic predictions using SCAT or resumming large logarithms the way Brian and collaborators did in the past. And this is the analytic prediction of SCAT for the thrust. This is known to resum n cube LL contributions. What you see here is the resum prediction expanded in strong coupling and comparing the next-to-next leading order, alpha s cube contributions. And what you expect is that for small values of thrust, they should agree. For large, they may not, because there is some end expanded prediction misses some power corrections, which are not included. And this is the comparison. What we also did to show a different representation of the same, where the first bin, which is not even seen here, is enlarged into this region by logarithmic scaling. So, for instance, you cannot even see that it will turn back, because I just cut that first bin, but it turns back and goes positive infinite. And you see quite good agreement between our numerical prediction and the analytic result up to about this point, where some deviation is seen, and that is due to the fixed low scale cut that you have to put in any numerical calculation, which is in this case at 10 to the minus 8 in relative to the hard scale, to the Q squared. And this is the ratio of the two, so you see a nice agreement between the two. Therefore, I tend to believe that our calculation is correct also in the very first bins. This is actually not a very nice representation of this kind of result, because due to the very large scale on the vertical axis, you suppress the differences that you see for large values of tau. So you can instead use square here, which suppresses the vertical axis. This is the heavy jet mass, similar plot. And you see that there are power corrections, which are sizable. But then for very small values, the two agree very nicely. So this was the situation when I arrived here. And with the help of Matthew, I started to try to match the fixed order predictions, which is the red distribution, and the analytic resum predictions based on SCAT technology, and I will show the results. But before going to that, these were the already published event shapes. We are able to compute event shapes which have not been published at next leading order. For instance, there is the jet cone energy fraction, which is an interesting observable, because even the next to leading order curve agrees with the fixed order, with the Aleph data pretty well. And so you might wonder that if next leading order agrees with data, what are the higher order corrections? And it turns out that the higher order corrections are very small. NNLO, which is the red, and NLO, which is the blue overlap and are very close. And the next-to-next leading order starts to deviate where there is actually need for deviation according to the data. And this is the energy-energy correlation, which is notoriously difficult even at next-to-leading order, and this is our prediction at next-to-next leading order. Okay, so this is some work which was started here and in progress now. Here I have the fixed order matched with the resummed and QLL predictions and power correction. Very simple, so hadron masses are not taken into account. For the thrust distribution, this is a simultaneous fit to data in terms of the strong coupling and the non-perturbative parameter, which appears here. And the value of the strong coupling turns out to be smallish. This is at 91.2 GeV to LF data. But the agreement between the two is very nice. Actually, the gray band is not the complete experimental uncertainty, only the statistical uncertainty of the measurements. And the red points are all predictions. So it turns out that no matter which range you use, the usual range between 0.1 and 0.25, or the whole range up to the leading order kinematic limit, which is here from the very first bin, you get the same result for the fit. And we also have very preliminary fit for the heavy jet mass. And this was the situation in the past based on resound and fixed order NNLO using the GGGH code for the heavy jet mass and the thrust. And the disturbing feature is that you have different predictions for the two different event shapes. And you would like to have some common result for the two. The combined is actually very strange because it gives negative power correction and a very large value of alpha s, while the separate fits give small values of alpha s. And what we seem to get is, again, not very nice in the sense that the fixed order and the hadronization, the power corrections, are very correlated. But they have an overlapping region in the range, which is around 0.114. So I'm wondering what the broadenings will give in this game. If you are interested, I can give you some details on the performance of the code. I seem to have lost. I have not lost. Yeah, I have lost one slide, never mind. This is the end of my talk, of the conclusions, and I'm not going to read the conclusions, but I simply thank you for your attention.
Your non-perturbative power correction, you have to extend the subtraction of the normalon piece from to next and next leading order, right?
Yes, so that that is still work in progress. But yes, that's the idea. And if it is promising for lab one, then of course one may try to do it for other lab data and other data like TOSSO, etc. My impression is that the data are actually not all of very high quality. So one has to make a selection which data to use, because the data themselves seem to contradict.
I mean, when you look at the data and sort of the different perturbative approximations, in the end you wonder whether one's can use event shapes for serious alpha s determinations.
Well,
in the end, there's too much model dependence.
I think it's
quite a large extrapolation that you have to make here.
I think if this picture that you make a simultaneous fit in the non-perturbative, and this seems to be in the non-perturbative and the perturbative parameter, and you find overlapping region for all variables with the best available fixed order, which is next to next leading order, matched with n cube LL, including power corrections, then I think that is a.
The power corrections, and of course it's not such a rigorous theory. It's pretty large effect, and there's some order dependence.
But the effect is very small if you do the fit to the NNLO plus n cube LL. This A0 parameter comes close to the value of lambda QCD, which is what you expect.
For instance, here I wouldn't give much to this overlapping, because within the model dependence I can probably shift this red ellipse a little bit and then it's totally.
Well, and the other approach is, of course, to do modeling of hadronization using some of the codes like JetSet or PTIA. But that is at that point is not completely on first principles, right?
Yeah, so that's what I say. Maybe one has to admit in the end that it's not so suitable for.
Well, what I'm trying to say is that at the end, the hadronization corrections become very small. If you go to NNLO plus n cube LL, then the room for hadronization corrections, for instance, in this analytic model with a single parameter, the non-perturbative parameter, the best value of non-perturbative parameter is close to lambda QCD.
At the moment, such a large correlation is because you don't have the Q squared dependence.
Right, I have to include the Q. So, as I said, if this is promising for lab one, then we have to extend it to other data.
Sorry, no Q squared dependence in your power correction?
Not yet, in anything.
I mean, this the Y23 variable is supposed to have, and you can see from the data, has a much smaller hadronization correction.
Right. That's why we have been contacting you with Zoltan. He's working on that. Exactly.
One idea that we developing with Jesse Taylor, people at MIT, is to try and do these sort of calculations but for Grun observables. Mm-hmm. So, at the moment we have very preliminary studies, of course there are no data, because these group event shapes are not. Mm-hmm. But what they seem to, like, the general features that we observe is that the dependence on hadronization correction is very much reduced. Mm-hmm. Now we also understand how to perform resummation. So the fixed order is trivial, the jet function, implementing grouping in a fixed order calculation is
At this point, yes.
Just a different jet function. And I think, and now we know how to do resummation next to next minimum. So this is something that we're looking at. But I think this will also help, because the hadronization correction will become very, very small.
Mm-hmm. It's a good project to try to match the two.
Then you have to do some archaeology on the left data.
Yeah,
well,
apparently Jesse has access to lab data.
Well, actually, the Opal collaboration has made an archiving of lab data such that they can redo any analysis. So we have to contact the right person. I know who the right person is, but we have to contact him with a well-defined and well-developed idea, because I think you don't want to waste someone else's time. But in principle, now it is possible. And maybe it is also possible with Aleph, I guess, but I'm not completely in picture with that.
So if I just look at the perturbative cross-sections, it still seems that the convergence is not perfect, right? Because the NNLO band is outside of the
Well, it is kind of touching, right? So in the case of energy-energy correlation, there is a big jump, but then the NNLO is just touching the NLO. And if you have such a big jump from first order to second order, you might actually suspect that the scale dependence band does not accurately measure the missing higher order uncertainties. In the other case, jet energy, jet cone energy fraction, actually they are very close. The other ones that I showed are typical, typically such that that there is a bit of increase, but the band, the two bands are just touching. So then I start to think that the perturbation theory actually works as you might hope.
So your comparison with the other calculations based on antennas method, it seems that from what you told about Stefan revisiting his calculation and finding better agreement, it seems like part of the problem is just that we did not probably spend enough time in checking the accuracy.
Yeah, it could very well be, yes.
So is this going to be revisited? Or so?
Well, at this point, I think Stefan has revisited, and we have a general feature that we agree pretty well, except for the very large values. For the other one, actually, we were in contact with Gudrun while she was here, and she produced new numbers to me last Friday. And the new numbers that I got from her for the C coefficient, which is the NNO coefficient, have still a bit larger uncertainties than this one. Okay? So that's why I have shown a little bit of performance here. That these are time-consuming calculations. I don't know what the other groups need. This is the typical timing we have. For double real emission, we need 15 billion phase space points. And to get a smooth curve and to compute 15 billion phase space points, we use typically a cluster of several hundred cores, and so we need about one day. And also the real virtual is comparable. It's a little bit faster, but altogether we need about 2 days to produce these plots. And then the question is how much time you need to produce the other predictions, because if they need 2 days, then running 20 days, that's easy. But if they need 2 weeks, then running 20 weeks is already very difficult. So I don't know. Maybe it's only a matter of time, but I don't know. But with Gudrun, we have been trying to sort this out.
But in these regions where you have discrepancies, I mean, they're really four-jet observables, right? So you should be using a different strategy for your phase-space interpolation. I mean, especially say for the thrust of a sequence.
Well, it's certainly not. Well, so Adam can comment on this. You actually put together the plots from two pieces, right? Lower end and the higher end. Or just single run?
Single run.
Single run. So then he uses the same everywhere.
So to explore that discrepant region, you're wasting an awful lot of time recomputing the other region.
True. Well, you see that the uncertainty here is basically zero.
Okay. That's, yeah, the other people, I guess, have the problem.
He also has more uncertainty, at least Stefan, but it's just systematically.
Yeah, it's pretty clear that he has enough statistics and just something wrong.
But Adam's word, he has checked it with Medgraph, and Medgraph gives that curve.
So going back to your comment that you wish to develop a general method that would be, let's say, suitable for automation like Catania Seymour, like that for this picture. So are you saying that now with this general formulas that you wrote down for ML plus 1 and plus 2, so this cannot be applied to other variables as well?
So I would say that we could make a 4-jet calculation instead of 3-jet calculation, a 4-jet calculation in a month if the matrix elements were available. Which matrix elements? The two-loop 5-leg matrix elements, V plus 4 partons. And then, of course, the more interesting part of the question is what happens to proton-proton collisions, and that is part of the future. So we hope to develop the same technology within much less time now, because for many reasons, basically the technology is set up and we understand, I mean, it's just crossing from final state to initial state, so we understand what to do. The technology is set up to compute the integrals. We know how to check them. The technology is also available. But nevertheless, I wouldn't like to say that this is a trivial step. But let's hope that it will not take another 10 years. Because then it becomes useless. But maybe by next year, if it is ready, then it's interesting.
Talking about other processes. Last time when I checked your papers and the subtraction, it was 2008-2007. So for the mapping, you use some kind of combination of boost and rescaling. And so that has some issues if you have massive final state particles,
yes.
Even if you consider a Higgs or W. Have you worked on that? Or
Yes, but that's not the prime goal at the moment. We have ideas which are explored to some extent, but not worked out completely, how to extend the method such that we can make predictions for massive particles too. In particular, we are aware of your way of making the mappings. So yes, that's.
So my question, the other part is connecting to this, the technical part. So when you do this master integral, so you have 287, as I remember, or five anyway. So it's a amount of integrals. So if you make changes in the mappings, does it make these whole analytic integrals completely different, or do you have to really work hard to readjust?
So it's an issue which comes up every second year. For instance, this year is the second year. We have been investing a lot into this question. I still don't have a better answer. This is the answer. Maybe I'm not smart enough and someone could do it much better. We have invested, especially Giuseppe Bevilacqua, who joined the group recently, invested several months into this question, but still there is no better solution. Apparently, maybe we still do not understand sufficiently well the structure of the complicated structure of the kinematical singularities, but that's the best I can offer at the moment. And I still want to come back to this issue, but I cannot say more.
For the electron positron annihilation, are there B quarks with masses?
In these calculations, the B quarks are massless. They can be. It's known to have an effect of several percent at next to leading order. At next to leading order, I don't know, because even the matrix elements are not available for, I mean, the massive core matrix elements are not available. I would not expect a very large effect. I mean, if it was, I guess, 3% at next to leading order, for instance, jet rates with massive Bs, then probably it is not significant at next to next leading order.
I'm a little confused. Going to higher and higher order doesn't make the B core mass less.
No. That's true, but the higher order itself is suppressed, right? So the correction, the next to next leading order correction comes with an alpha s cube, which so the whole correction gets suppressed, and therefore at the end, if we have a similar effect on the correction as it was at next to leading order, then it still gets reduced because of the alpha s cube instead of alpha s squared.
But when you come to use lower q squared data, then that will be more important.
True. Yes. So, well, for the moment, it's just a game. We shall start it here to see whether we can come up with a unified picture for the event shapes where we have at least some overlap of these ellipses, which would make the whole game more interesting. But yes, there is more to understand.